copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
We're going to talk this morning about faith and church planting movements, and a very, very important topic. The writer to the Hebrews says in Hebrews 11:6, without faith, it is impossible to please God. And without faith, it is impossible to see a church planting multiplication movement generated and sustained and ongoing. How do we exercise it? What is faith? How do we exercise it? What are characteristics needed to take shape in the life of the church planter in order to live a life of faith, in order not just to have faith, but to see what we believed? You know, faith is all about seeing something before it's happened. And that's the starting point, but we want to get to the point of actually seeing what we've seen. Actually physically seeing what we've seen with our inner eyes. So the first thing is the leader must be moved before he or she can be part of a movement. That sounds strange, doesn't it? But what I mean by movement is the moving of the Spirit of God in the heart of the leader. If our hearts are not on fire, if they're not being penetrated by God himself and by a vision of God's future for our countries, our contexts, then there will be no movement. The movement starts in the heart of God, in the heart of the leader. The movement of God starts in the heart of the leader. Many of the great men and women of God were people who went through some periods of isolation. Moses in the desert for 40 years. Now we won't be in sabbatical or in the desert for 40 years. But there is a time in which we, as movement leaders, need to be isolated in order for the Lord to reach our hearts and to do business with us, to be shut up unto him. So we are moved by God into isolation, moved to behold the glory of the Lord, or him in his glory. Something so astounding, something so captivating, something so magnificent that it would consume us and that it would motivate us and inspire us and to give us a greater vision of himself than what we've had up to now. And when you look at the disciples going with Jesus up onto the mountain of transfiguration, they experienced Jesus in a very normal way, the way that they've had always experienced him. And then suddenly he was transfigured. It was a kairos moment for them. Suddenly he was still Jesus, but he was Jesus in a totally different fashion. And it did something to them. Peter, when he writes 1 Peter, he talks about that moment in his life. It was transformative. And I hope that you've all had or will have such moments when Jesus became full of glory for you, in front of your eyes, in your hearts, and motivated you to be and to do something that was greater than you could ever imagine or ever experienced. So it is being moved to behold the Lord in his glory, because church planting is all about Jesus and his glory. He is, in church planting, we are basically creating the forerunner of the return of Jesus Christ, a community that is so transformed that it is a mirror of the transformation that will take place when Jesus comes back and makes all things new. It starts with the hearts of renewed people in a community. And when non-Christians enter into that, they are surprised. They are quizzical. They have been submerged into something that is totally fresh and totally new, and they're drawn into it. The leader must be moved to absolute surrender to God. You know, many Christians, they do something like this exercise. They have a piece of paper, and on the top of the piece of paper, they write my plan for my life. And then they write lots of good things, you know, that they want to do with their lives. They want to earn a lot of money, like Wesley, you know, so that they can save a lot of money, so that they can give some of that money to the Lord's work. They want to marry a beautiful woman or a beautiful man, or they want a German car because, you know, they need to get to their ministry assignments very quickly. in terms of their own spiritual restoration, they need a summer house on a lake, you know. So, and they need 3 kids with straight teeth because the orthodontist costs are horrendous these days, you know. So they need these things, and they write down their list, and they come to Jesus and they say, Jesus, I've thought a long time about this, and I've even prayed about it. This is my plan for my life. And if you look at it, it's got a big, thick line at the bottom on the right side, and it's meant for your signature. So what I want you to do, Jesus, is to read through my plan for my life and to sign it. And by doing that, you will give me to understand that you are okay with my plan for my life. And Jesus looks at it and he puts it away. He just puts it away. I mean, he's a quick reader, so he puts it away. He gives you a new piece of paper and it has the same heading, My Plan for Your Life. And then it has an empty black line here, but outside of that, there's nothing there. And he gives it to you and you look at it and you say, Jesus, there's a problem here. You haven't put anything on this paper. I see the heading, but my mother taught me never to sign anything that I haven't first read and understood. You haven't put anything in here. What if you put in here, to remain single? Or to drive a Lada? Incidentally, do you know how you can double the value of your Lada?
Put petrol in it.
You fill it with gasoline. Yeah, petrol. Yeah. But what, Lord? What if you say, I can't have a house on the lake, but I have this apartment on the 7th floor of this large city, or, I don't have any kids, or they have crooked teeth. And Jesus says, I want you to sign. Then, because by signing the blank line, you are communicating to me that I am sufficient. I am sufficient. It's not the blessing of Jesus that fills our hearts. It's Jesus. And the blessing that Jesus gives is the kidnapper to take us back to Him. He is the giver of every good and perfect gift. If the gift is so wonderful, how much more wonderful is the giver of the gift? And if you have this piece of paper in front of you, my plan, God's, Jesus' plan for your life, the question is, can you sign it? Blank, and without Him putting anything in there. Which is the question of surrender. Have I given my life totally, fully, unequivocally to Him? Lord Jesus Christ, anything, anywhere, anytime, I am willing. I was taught that by a Welshman. Mr. Davies, wonderful prayer, man of prayer, wonderful, very unassuming man, powerful, powerful speaker who reached my heart when I was 18. And he said, this is what the normal Christian life is. It's surrender. Everything begins with surrender. All great things of God begin with the surrender of our hearts. Because God knows the biggest obstacle to movement is the human heart. And if He has our hearts, well, he can do great things. If he doesn't, he can't. So, movements begin with the movement leader being moved. What do I define movement? I'll illustrate movement. When you look in the scriptures, there are many, many word pictures for movement. The stars of the sky that cannot be counted. You know, God takes Abraham out to the night sky where there's no artificial light, and you can see literally millions of stars. And what God does in Abraham's life is he overpowers him. He blows his circuits. He says, you know, I'm going to give you an assignment that you cannot fulfill. Or look at the sand granules on the shore of the sea. Can you count them? Another word picture for movement is the picture of a flood. Is a movement picture. It is such a deluge of water, such a strong and powerful amount of water that it exceeds the bounds of the banks of the river. So you cannot contain it. It is uncontainable. That is movement. Something that is uncontainable. You will not be able, you can maybe channel it a little bit, but you will not contain it. It will get away from you. It will overpower you. It will supersede you. You cannot manage it. You cannot manage a movement of the Spirit of God. So it's not manageable. That is movement. That is movement. And that is what we have not seen in Europe yet. But we can think movement. You know, when you're at night, these are tiring days. We get to bed at night and we're so tired, but we have so many thoughts in our heads. We want to go to sleep, but we can't put ourselves to sleep. Thinking about movement in these days is like preparing for sleep. When you prepare for sleep, for the first hour before you want to go to sleep, what you need is no arousal. Don't arouse your soul, your mind. Don't look at emails, because you're going to find an email there that's going to bring arousal to your mind and your heart. Don't look at your email. I never look at emails after 8 o'clock at night. I'm sorry. I don't do that. If it's going to get me upset, I can get upset tomorrow at 7, okay? But I don't want to do that. I don't want it to destroy my sleep. But what we do is we try to put ourselves in the position of probably falling asleep better than in other situations. Thinking of movement the way we have been in these days is like this. It is putting us more in a position to experience movement than if we hadn't had these days together. It is no guarantee. There is no guarantee. It is a work of God. But it is a work of God who want, among leaders who want this work of God to come. And as I said, it begins with surrender. It begins with surrender. And then it moves to faith. Faith is seeing. Faith has to do with sight. You look at John chapter 3, and Jesus talks about, John 3:16, but it's all in the context of seeing. Faith has to do with sight. And it is seeing what is not yet seen, but it is seen from a divine vantage point. It is seeing what is yet to come. And this sight is a gift from God. It is cloistering ourselves with the Lord and saying, Lord, if you were to bless England or the UK with a church planting multiplication movement, what would that look like? For the next half an hour, for the next half day, for the next 3 days, as I'm praying and fasting, perhaps, tell me, give me a vision that's from you. What would it look like? Well, it would certainly look above and beyond anything that you'd ever seen. So you won't be able to compare it to something that you already know. It will be something totally new, something totally fresh and overpowering. So you will want to ask him, Lord, give me your vision. Give me your vision of what you have for my country. It is having a posture of thanksgiving. We thank the Lord for what will be as if it had already come. I've shared with you this verse in Colossians 4:2, where it says, be devoted to prayer, being watchful with thanksgiving. This is a posture of thanksgiving. It's an anticipating heart. I'm praying knowing the answer will come. It's just a matter of time. And I'm looking like the watchman, looking for the morning. I'm looking for the first rays. Where are there signs of prevenient grace? You know, prevenient grace is grace ahead of grace. No person can believe in Jesus unless he has some sort of grace already at work in his heart that gives him the grace to believe. So there's also prevenient grace in the movement. That, you know, the first rays of the sun on the first day and the new day, they will begin to break over the top of the mountain, and a movement will be breaking in somewhere. So where is that happening? Where is the Lord allowing me to see that, catch a glimpse of it? I'm expecting it. I won't be surprised when I see it. I'll probably say, ah, I knew it was coming, Lord, but I didn't know it was coming from there, or from him, or from that denomination, or from this leader, or from this teenager. I knew it was coming, but, oh, it's so wonderful to know. Now I know where it's coming from, or where it's starting. And then faith is seeing the preferable future from the vantage point of the Lord, having a posture of thanksgiving, and then it has to do with, this is your leadership role of spotting potential movement leaders, church planters and movement leaders, apostolic leaders. And I define apostolic leaders as people who have a vision and a gift aptitude for an entire region, something greater than a city or one location. So it is your job, with the help of the Holy Spirit, to find these people and to awaken them to a vision for church planting multiplication. You need to find them, spot them, get to them, and give them this vision. They will not have it themselves. They need somebody to give it to them. And it has to do with a premonition of where God will work. Mapping a movement. Try to map a movement. Just prayerfully have a blank map of the UK before you and say, Lord, guide me. If I had a premonition from you, where would you start? And how would that develop? Where would it begin to reach out other regions or areas or cities? Give me a premonition. Help me to see, to feel, to sense, to rejoice over something that will happen, that has not yet happened. Try this exercise. It's a spiritual exercise. A movement map that is so powerful that you've never seen anything like it. And just let it be your own personal devotional tool. Don't share it with other people because, you know, we're not... We need to be careful with visions and big statements. Many things we need to keep in our own heart. And just savor it and nourish it and husband it until it gets to a movement. It's not about us having the vision. It's about the Lord being kind enough to share his vision with us. But nourish that in our hearts and let it grow and let it captivate us. Let it permeate us. And then that will, of course, be felt by others. People will say, I'm sensing you're thankful but not satisfied. I'm sensing you have in your heart something bigger than what I've ever seen or dreamed about. I'm sensing you know more. You're expecting more than I am. So, we're going to talk about these things, but things to ponder are, how has God gotten a hold of my heart? How has God gotten a hold of my heart? What can I do to strengthen my faith muscles? And where do I see a church planting movement rising up in my culture? You know, the great need is to see this rising up outside of Asia and Africa and South America. That's where all the literature comes from, you know, but it's inapplicable to Europe. Where are we seeing it on our continent? Where can we encourage one another through seeing it?